you can make a change. Tomorrow, everybody can make a change in what they're doing. It's one of the few structures of our industrial society that we can change the next day. And that's the great politics of food, and that's the great empowering thing that food can do. These food choices, we can change them tomorrow.
That's it for Sprouts. You've been listening to our recap of the 2008 Farm Bill. I'm Molly Stentz from WORT in Madison, Wisconsin. Production assistance came from KP Whaley and Norm Stockwell at WORT. Sprouts is distributed and coordinated by Pacifica Radio Network. Thanks to Michael Yoshida at Satellite Operations. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to rebroadcast on Sprouts to showcase it nationally, contact our air traffic controller, Ursula Rudenberg, at ursula@pacifica.org. That's ursula@pacifica.org. Thanks for listening, and see you next week on Sprouts.
And coming up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM, it's Bathrop Spears Broadsides with special guest Anita Henry of the Measure K Commission, MedX, and all kinds of other important and interesting bodies. Stay tuned to hear her body.
Who owns the land? Who?
And that was Land by 15, as well as Let's Sleep on the Mayor's Lawn by Phil Freak and Just Kidding. So, welcome to Bathroom Spears Broadsides, all you listeners out there. I hope you're listening out there anyway. In the studio with me is Anita Henry. Hi, Anita.
Good evening, Robert.
And Anita is one of the four surviving members of the Measure K Commission. There are actually three of them have resigned, and there are four left. And there are three vacancies for all of you ambitious folks. And we're going to be talking about the Measure K Commission and its activities or lack thereof in the last year and a half, and also, more importantly, the drug war in Santa Cruz, which is really more important than the activities of a hobbled, castrated, packed, and co-opted committee that actually has been reduced to meeting twice a year to rubber stamp the staff, in this case Tina Schull, who not only sets up the agenda but runs the meetings.
And is also our liaison with the police department. It is through her we will get all our information.
They trust Tina, but they don't trust the appointed commission that came directly from the voters. It's interesting. So that's, of course, nothing new for the police department, which has gone to extreme lengths to hobble any citizen review statewide. The Copley decision in Los Angeles 2 years ago gutted police review boards throughout the country. I don't think, however, that it has gutted the Measure K Commission, because in Santa Barbara, stats are being forwarded from the police department to its equivalent commission. I think it's a Measure R commission down there, or a Measure P commission, something like that. But it was one of a number of cities which adopted the finding that marijuana enforcement, not for medical marijuana, but for all marijuana, should be the lowest priority for the police. This is sort of a chicken shit way of saying, let's do what we realize we should have done 60 years ago. What they really need to do, of course, is eliminate the criminal law on this, but because police lobbies and pharmaceutical lobbies and, I don't know, judges and lawyers' lobbies are so strong. I mean, it's hard to tell what's stopping there being a significant change, since marijuana has been found by all kinds of appropriate agencies to have all kinds of medical uses. It's still on Schedule I nationally. It's still a crime at the state level. And this medical marijuana exception, which people have heralded, and which Anita Henry here has been helping to, her work through MedX, which is a distribution center, center, you're a distributor of medical marijuana to patients.
I'm a small in-home delivery and support service.
Right, and you...
That's how my involvement began in this, actually. I have my own medical conditions. I was just thrilled when I heard about people working on Prop 215 and 95 and 96, and I kind of got on board then and was very happy to see it pass, and was thrilled when SB 420 passed and all the talk about having a state-issued card and then the promise of access at local dispensaries. I mean, everything looked so hopeful and good for a while. The reason I'm here tonight, though, is, Robert, you know, I want to talk a little bit about this Measure K committee, because let's face the facts. The majority of vote, this was passed overwhelmingly by the voters. We know that the population wants this to be the lowest law enforcement priority. But this committee, this commission that we have, it's the only way we can hold the police accountable for what citizenry are saying. So, in other words, we get together and meet, and people from the public that have a grievance or a gripe or have had some kind of issue with law enforcement comes to us, tells us their grievance, and I feel it's my responsibility. I mean, I thought that's why I was appointed as a commissioner. I felt it was going to be my responsibility to look into the details and to see if everything was kosher. And instead, over the last year and a half, we've just been fed statistics, information, behavior formats, personality behaviors. This is one of the strangest committees or commissions I've ever been on, and I have been on several. And it's probably because it's so closely related to law enforcement and the city manager, who we know is king.
Now, you're not a critic of the police in every circumstance. You've actually been a supporter. We've had differences of opinion about the value of the deputies and the work of the SCPD. You've actually been very helpful to you in a number of cases. You've been on the Commission of Prevention of Violence Against Women.
I was on the County Domestic Violence Commission, which is not a city. It's the county commission appointed by the Board of Supervisors. I've been on the County Women's Commission. I've worked on a lot of commissions, and I love the police. I mean, I'm in favor of public safety. You know, I live here. I have children and grandchildren. What's more important than public safety? But harassing people, abusing people that are in less fortunate positions than us, not being accountable to a commission that was set up to oversee this. This is what's the great mystery to me. It was put on the ballot. It was passed. Council members appointed people, which is another issue I have. I think they kind of did a personality check on who they decided to appoint to these seats, because it's obvious to me over the past year and a half, I don't think anything is going to get done with this commission. And if anything is going to get done, it's going to have to get done with numbers of people that this issue is going to affect. So if you believe the war on drugs is a waste of money, if you've been in a situation or in an environment where you've been harassed by the police because you like to use cannabis, I'm not even going to say medicate with cannabis, even for recreational use. If you're 18 years and older, God damn it, it is your right and control over your body and what you consume. I mean, life is full of anxiety. What do they prefer? You go and drink a quart of whiskey, you know, suck your thumb, beat your wife. What are we to do when everybody is facing all these anxiety disorders and having so many, and myself included, you know, I'm not being judgmental of anybody, but cannabis is a very helpful therapeutic herb, and law enforcement needs to lay off. I've believed in the past that law enforcement was very fair, even-handed, open, and honest. And I still really have no reason to doubt that, because I haven't had direct communication with them. I'm not allowed to, Robert. I am not allowed to go to the police, I guess, unless I make a public records act, which I should not have to do, which they would make me pay for. Why should I have to do that? Why don't the police assign us a liaison to work with us? Why won't they help us? Robert, they're working against us.
Well, they do have a spin artist who shows up at the Measure K Commission hearing, Zach Friend, who was at the last hearing. I didn't get to the last hearing, which was June 9th on Monday. And it was
well, it wasn't advertised, because I spoke to two people today and they didn't even know the meeting was going on.
No, it wasn't advertised, although presumably it's a Brown Act requirement that they post a little note outside the door, but that, of course, doesn't constitute advertisement. And indeed, the chair and the vice chair, both of whom resigned before this meeting, the chair was Larry True, the vice chair was Eric Rice, and you had urged that there be some significant advertising, and indeed even Tina Scholl, apparently, to carry this out, put up a mock press release, a potential press release for the commission to release. But the problem was that the city council has decreed that the commission shall meet only twice a year. So it had a meeting in December, and then its most recent meeting, as mentioned before, was June 9th. Now, actually, it was supposed to be June 2nd, but Tina Scholl unilaterally decided to move it to June 9th. Now, I don't want to say this actually would have made a hell of a lot of difference, because nobody probably knew about the June 2nd meeting anyway. I think I did many, many months ago. But, you know, it's hard to plan 6 months ahead and keep this on your calendar. I asked Tina to let me know. She never did. And I mentioned that to her when I spoke to her, and she acknowledged that she hadn't done that. Of course, she and I, there's no love lost between us, so I can understand that, although her responsibility as a paid employee.
She's an excellent employee. I mean, if I were city manager, or if I were the authority, king of the world, ruling over the citizenry, I would want to hire an employee like Tina. She is extremely effective.
Of course, effective towards what is the question?
Controlling members of the commission, running the meetings, telling us what direction we're going to take, what we can do, what we can't do. Robert, it's just extremely frustrating. I want to know where we're going to go from here, what it is we can do. Because I don't think the city council is going to change. Now, there are three open seats. Emily Riley, Ryan Coonerty, and Tony Madrigal have three seats open, and they should, if they haven't already, appointed somebody to fill those seats, or they'll probably wait until November or December.
And the city council itself, of course, will have open seats. I'm not sure whether it's three or four this time. I think it's four. Four seats are up for a vote.
I think we've got to do a lot of work on city council member on who gets on that council.
Right.
It's been too easy.
It's kind of like
long.
It's like the presidential race. You get the choice between Mr. War Party and Mr. War More Party. And so, in the city council, you often have a really horrible set of choices.
Well, let's take Rotkin for example. The older you
can
get,
I
don't want him. But
who appointed you.
He is the man who appointed me
to
the Measure K Commission. He knows how passionate I feel about marijuana. Mm-hmm. I love that herb.
Okay, I should point out we're talking with Anita Henry here. You're tuned to 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. The call-in number here is 427-3772. I'm Robert Norse. The name of the show is Bathrop's Piers Broadsides. Again, 427-3772 if you'd like to call in and comment. We did invite two other members of the commission, the resigning chair and vice chair, to come in. I believe the chair wrote a rather impressive critique.
Oh, I was so pleased, Robert.
The city council, Larry True. Yeah. And I know Eric Rice has been on the show expressing his concerns about the issue, about how the city has treated the commission. You know, I mean, again, I want to review very, very briefly the history of the Santa Cruz City Council and the Downtown Commission, the Measure K Commission. It was originally proposed, I think, back in the summer of 2006. And I kept asking the Measure K Commission proponents to go to the City Council to ask that it be put on the ballot as a City Council initiative measure that citizens wanted to vote on. I'm not sure that they did that, but I do know the City Council of its own accord, however liberal you may think Tony Madrigal is, or Ed Porter is, or Mike Rotkin is, they all refused to do this. So it had to be. The Measure K Commission measure had to be gotten together by citizens getting 6,000-7,000 votes signatures from members of the community who are voting, registered voters in the city limits, which is really quite a task. But they did have some folks from out of town, and they were able to they were required to gather, according to what Anita has just handed me.
I save every article that's related to what promises are made.
3,423 signatures by April 20th, 2 years ago, to get it on the ballot. They had some out-of-town cash because this whole Measure K commission was supposed to be part of a statewide effort this year to tax and regulate marijuana and end its criminal status statewide. It was funded by the Marijuana Policy Project, I guess. And I guess other... some out-of-town cash.
Town Normal. They all gave a little bit of money. Right, but it was quite an expense, Robert, and quite a lot of labor went into getting this.
You know, my thought, and I know that I didn't really fault them. Any action often seems to me to be better than no action. I'm going to look at this in a moment. But the fact of the matter was they then hired $10,000 for a consultant to decide the best way to put the matter on the ballot and so forth. And my thought was we're living in the community that was... predates by 3 or 4 years Proposition 215 in 1996, which okayed medical marijuana statewide. Here in the county, we had an advisory measure. It was Measure A.
Theodore and others
all worked on.
I didn't work on. I wasn't involved at that time.
I know that.
But I know Theodore.
A number of people did. I think Andrea Tischler
and did a lot of work.
When she was at the Compassion Flower Inn. And so this is a community that believes quite strongly that marijuana is no business of the police. Drug abuse of any kind, you know, particularly if it's by minors or by people who are being victimized in some way, and if it's involved with violence, these are issues in any circumstance that are of concern. But the criminalization of marijuana per se was something this county wanted to do away with. Well, we don't have a county-by-county law system in this country. You have to do away with it at the state level, and then you often have to do away with it also at the federal level, though most of the criminal law in this country is state. So once you get them to end it, you can, at the state level, the feds can come running in and try and do their occasional raids, but it's mostly the county sheriffs and the SCPD and the park rangers and the California Highway Patrol that you have to watch out for in terms of marijuana busts. And the marijuana busts are increasing. They're not decreasing.
Oh, no, I have statistics that I brought with me that are boring, but the rates are going up.
It's like an infernal machine, a juggernaut that has been put in place that is growing in power and malignity. I'm not sure what the proper word is. In any case, the citizens of Santa Cruz wanted to put this on the ballot, and they finally did. The city council refused to endorse it, and Ed Porter and Fook spoke against it. That's his right. He has a right not to want a measure that would... And what the measure did was, it essentially said...
It made a lot of people happy, and a lot of people were relieved, and a lot of people were very proud to be citizens of this progressive little beautiful city we live in.
Well, there were several, as I say, there were three cities that voted for similar measures as supposedly a preparation this year to tax and regulate statewide and this marijuana madness, this reefer madness nonsense statewide in California. And what this measure did was, it really didn't do that much. What it did was it made marijuana enforcement for all marijuana use, sales, cultivation, transportation, you name it, the lowest priority if any of that happened on private property.
And you were over 18.
You know, and if you were over 18, if it wasn't involved in any other criminal offense. I don't know why they didn't make it public property, too. It's not clear to me. I guess maybe they feared I don't know what they feared. Maybe they were, again, trying to do one of these half-assed, let's please the conservatives measures in order to, you know, get the vote in. Well, this kind of thing had been tried in Berkeley, and I think marijuana enforcement was the lowest priority everywhere in Berkeley through a 1979 measure. The police, of course, ignored it and continued to enforce it because they have their own law in Berkeley. The police department in all cities has their own... They come to their own conclusions as to what they're going to do. They're advised by the city attorney. They're often a very powerful lobbying force. They are certainly at the state level. They're very powerful. And in Santa Cruz City, they're very powerful, too. It's not going to be the police budget that's cut first. It's going to be the social services budget. It's going to be Parks and Rec budget, although Parks and Rec has a significant enforcement arm, too. So what this measure did was it provided not just those conditions, no marijuana, marijuana enforcement, the lowest priority in private if you're over 18, but it also set up a commission. And this is what Anita here was a member of, or is a member of. You're still on the commission.
I have no plans to leave, especially now that the chair and the co-chair have left, and have left very articulately, letting me know why they left, which kind of gave me some ammunition, because I often think I'm being self-conscious or paranoid or... But I'm starting to see the light, Robert. They're hypocrites. They're hypocrites.
Who's hypocrites?
The city council are hypocrites. Who's ever structured this are hypocrites. I don't know where to point the finger. All I know is if they genuinely cared, they wouldn't be working against us.
Well, again, a little more of the history of this, which I love, of course. History is one of my great passions, particularly local history on these kinds of issues. The city council refused to endorse this measure. The city attorney actually tried to derail it before it was passed by suggesting it had all kinds of defects. And then it was passed by, I think, 63% of the voters, something like that, 64%.
63.
And at that point, there was supposed to be a commission set up, I think, within 90 days. What happened?
Didn't happen.
None of the no city council member appointed anybody. Or let's put it this way.
I was the first appointee.
She was the first appointee, and you were appointed when?
April 20th, 420.
Six months later, she was appointed by Mike Rutkin. Now, at the same time, what the council did is it went behind closed doors, and it advised the city attorney to sue the proponents of the measure to gut the Measure K Commission by removing the police liaison, by removing the instruction that the police department was to deliver records that would verify that marijuana enforcement was indeed the lowest priority in any arrest involving marijuana. And what happened here was the police department threatened to sue, and there was a little bit of publicity around this. The city council agreed that with the police department, in fact, funded their lawsuit.
Is that the lawsuit with Theodora?
That was the Carey? Lawsuit with
yeah.
Theodora against Theodora
that, yeah.
Carey and the other proponents of this measure.
Carl Reiner?
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that sounds familiar. And then Ben Rice, who's actually spoke on this program by phone and who spoke at the last December meeting of the Measure K Commission, in my evaluation, either through bad judgment or overwork or insufficient counsel because he didn't see enough of the situation. Essentially, I got to use the words, seemed to sell out the measure by allow. He did a settlement in court where it was gutted. And he agreed to have various parts of the law removed that would make it operational, specifically the parts that said that you shall have access to the police records. And
I think that's the biggest dilemma right now is actually getting access to some of the police records rather than depending on the police giving them to Tina giving them to us, and us signing off on them, and then them going in the annual report to the city council. I don't want to just see the statistics, the quantitative information. I want the qualitative information. I want to see the police report. I want to know what happened. I want to know the victim's side of the story. And just from my own personal experience, I've had a couple of instances with law enforcement, and when it came time to look at the police report, I said, I didn't say that. That didn't happen. So I know for a fact you can't go by exactly what the police reports say. They're often distorted.
Yeah, the police tend to take it from a certain perspective. I mean, they're considering a prosecutorial perspective. Otherwise, why do they forward it to the DA? And that can be very good in many circumstances, in the sense that if you're trying to deal with violent criminals...
Public safety is very important.
You want the public safety. But the problem is that more and more, a lot of police time is taken up with class crime, which has to do with sitting near a planter or biking the wrong way on Pacific Avenue or, sleeping after 11 o'clock at night, which, if you're homeless in Santa Cruz, is illegal. These kinds of laws are designed for the comfort of a certain economic class of people and to the discomfort and constitutional abuse of another class of people, poor people.
And, Robert, you'd have to agree. You've never missed a Measure K meeting, and at every meeting you bring up the issue of homelessness and the problems that people who do not have a place to sleep are facing when they want to medicate. And I can't even imagine what it might be like to be ill and to be homeless and to want to get some relief and maybe lay on the grass in the park and maybe smoke a bowl because you're not feeling well and have the police come and cite you?
Yeah, we have seen this actually happening in a number of cases. The famous case of Donna Dice, where an individual, 61-year-old woman, was medicating. Actually, she wasn't medicating, but she was accused later of medication. She had medicated in the past. She would medicate again in the future. But on this occasion, according to her account and those of other witnesses I spoke to, she wasn't smoking marijuana. She should have been able to without any problem. The police should have treated this as nothing. But instead, Sergeant Lamas used it as an occasion to demand her attention. She ignored him. Actually, it wasn't clear what he was seeking. I don't want to muddle these two issues because Dice is going to court, or at least she is scheduled to go to court on a charge of battery, supposedly throwing coffee on Sergeant Lamas.
Is this the woman whose arm was broken?
Yes, this is the one.
Tell me a little more. I heard about this woman.
Right. I'll tell you about it. And actually, we've talked about it a lot on the air. She was a woman who lives in her vehicle. She actually headed the Tenants' Rights Union of Santa Cruz when she was lodged in
that
regular
puts her
housing
on their shit list right away.
It was a respectable organization. Scott Kennedy was actually, supportive of that organization. And he and I are, not the best of friends. And I've always regarded him as a major two-faced politician in some respects, but in other respects, I got to give him credit for something.
He's an anti-Semite. I don't like him.
And we probably have different opinions on that one, too. But in any case, the issue of this particular commission, I was saying, they went to court. The city council went to court on behalf of the police, and the measure got gutted, not in court, but behind closed doors in a settlement because Ben Rice decided that was what to do. Now, nobody from the marijuana policy group, nobody from the ACLU's drug policy group, which actually has its major headquarters here in town, the ACLU's drug policy group, which defends clients accused of drug crimes nationwide, but not in Santa Cruz, with the exception of the corrals, had anything to say of or any legal help to offer Ben Rice. And so he decided that he'd better just cut a deal, and he essentially allowed this gutting of the measure. Then what happened was not only did, they delayed for months and months before appointing you, Anita, and the rest of the board. And then when you guys did make it onto the commission, And you tried to do something, you found yourself hamstrung, as usual, by Tina Scholl, who is the city manager for life, Dick Wilson's woman in the commission. And Tina's a, I don't want to say she's a nice woman, but she's a very presentable
person. Professional.
She's very professional. She's very presentable, and she's very well-spoken.
Very polite.
Very polite. But she also is, the agenda of the police.
She's so effective in shutting us down. This is what I don't like. She's
now, we should be very clear about how do you think she shut you down? Describe the concerns that you were at most of the meetings. You weren't at the last meeting, which was too bad.
Well, I was at the last meeting, which was the other day.
Earlier
I missed
Monday.
The meeting 6 months ago.
There was
ago.
A very long meeting that lasted for 2.5 hours because I actually persuaded someone who had a complaint against the police department to come and speak, Brian Parkett. He spoke it on the air. And since, he has made another complaint, which does
Nothing's
not
happened.
Appear in this report, which is interesting. I don't know that he's actually gone directly to the Measure K Commission, but he went to the city council publicly during oral communications and made this complaint. Now,
not even
his complaint was that first, he was attacked on private property by the police, the private property being the Bookshop Santa Cruz bathroom, where he wasn't smoking marijuana. He had some marijuana on him, and the police apparently had been following him around, and they arrested him there and took him out. That's the lowest priority. I don't know. That sounds a strange approach. Then, when he brought that issue up, about 2 or 3 weeks later, a man pounded on his door and said that he was an undercover agent for the police department. He called the police with 911, complained of someone banging at his door, and they said, yes, he's a police officer. He said, get a warrant. I'm not going to open the door for you. And the guy eventually left. It sounded like not only a
that's
second...
That's frightening.
Yeah, that's frightening. He eventually moved out of his apartment, and he's now homeless. He's living outside. I think he's living outside. At least he was for quite a while. He was also a witness to the Donna Dice assault at Sergeant Lamas, where he broke Donna Dice's arm in early May.
Where did that take place?
That was out at Lighthouse Field, that was on the parking lot A near Lighthouse Field, the three-tree lot. So the issue here, though, with the Measure K Commission is, I guess, you kind of have to delve into it deeply to see the kind of specific concerns and problems and twists and turns that show you how the police department and the staff can manipulate a commission. There's been a lot of cutting back of commission time. Meeting times have been shortened. Minutes have been shortened. Staff time has been cut back to some extent. You might say, well, if staff time is cut back, isn't that good? If the staff is controlling and ruling the commission, yes, but if the staff is actually a servant of the commission, if they're doing something, that can also be a problem for commissions. In this situation, the real issue was, can members of the community verify that Measure K is being followed? And the problem here is the police department would not release the records voluntarily. And one of the things Ben Rice said when he was sort of justifying his deal, which gutted the commission, was that this could be done other ways, by Public Records Act requests. But
they don't make that easy. They make that difficult also.
Right, and it's also, frankly, the problem with commissioners is they feel when they're appointed to a commission, you were saying this to me earlier, Anita, you don't want to have to go pay for a Public Records Act request, even though it's not necessarily that expensive. It involves time and energy. The police department comes in, requires you to pay.
I feel I shouldn't even have to go and request that. I feel I should be able to ask Tina Scholl, Tina, I'm a commissioner on this commission. This is the report. Please get it for me. Is she staff for the commission? No, she is staff for the city manager. She's keeping an eye on us. She is certainly not there to help move us along. She's typing, okay? She's putting out minutes.
This is the real crime, the real violation of the trust of the voters, is that a measure passed by the voters is being sabotaged by a council that's hostile to the measure. The really appropriate thing for professional politicians to do is, I mean, they may disagree with the measure, but the appropriate remedy is for them to go back to the voters and eliminate the Measure K Commission if that's what they want to do. They, of course, would then expose themselves as being a bunch of antediluvian drug warriors or let's put it this way, let's be a little gentler, gutless characters who are, you know, unwilling to stand up to the drug warrior mentality in the police department and the deputies, the sheriff's department, and in the statewide law enforcement agencies. And that's what they are. I mean, you saw this, we talked earlier, Anita, about the Office of Compassionate Use. The Office of Compassionate Use was supposedly passed with Mike Rutkin leading the cheer.
In 2005. That was like three years ago.
It's a city agency that's supposed to provide marijuana to people. And, of course, Rutkin carefully wrote it, so that would only happen once the feds legalize marijuana. Although it does provide a sort of some nominal support to Valerie and Mike Corral in their lawsuit against the feds, which I support. And, you know, much as I've been critical of the Corrals for not having doing a lot of other things locally, I certainly support their lawsuit.
Well, I support them also, but yeah. I don't want them to arbitrarily be treated more fairly than anybody else.
Right. I mean, I was impressed when Valerie Corral, you know, spoke out in favor of this huge 420 smokeout happening up at UCSC, which they tried to, you know.
She actually had her own smokeout behind Badass Coffee.
That's where I heard her, and she got a permit for it. And by the way, a medicating permit for a smokeout within 1,000 feet of a school is a violation of Measure 4, SB 420, and it's something for which Craig Canada was ticketed when he, walking back to his apartment, tried to medicate in front of Borders. And he was also harassed for it in front of what used to be Plumley's Candies, is now a video and flower shop on Cedar and Cathcart. So, you know, you clearly see differential activity. I mean, in a certain sense, I say right on, loosen it up as much as you can. But when it's only the favored few, the poster children, who get the benefits, then in a certain sense, everybody suffers because the illusion is created that this is, hey, the mayor gives marijuana away on the steps, as Mayor Crone did in 2002. This was the same mayor who, for 4 years, refused to open any dispensaries or allow any dispensaries to open, any legal dispensaries. There were no dispensaries open until 2005. 3 years later, when Greenway and then, I guess, Ken Sampson's club
Correct.
Opened up.
Correct.
And so the Measure K Commission, the reason I talk about it so much on the air is, well, it's twofold. First, it illustrates city council hypocrisy and police power. You know, and secondly, it's a way of really addressing the issue of what we can't, what we shouldn't be doing, and what doesn't really work, and what we need to do. What else do we need to do to end the drug war? And you and I talked about this today, Anita, on the phone, and I guess you know, you had some thoughts about that. What to do in terms of what can you do locally around the drug war? And the issue really has to do with new energy, activists who want to put in that time, who knows, possibly Public Records Act requests. I told you, I thought instead of spending tens of thousands of dollars on passing this initiative, if they had set up a group, a Public Records Act group that was constantly surveilling the police department, demanding the public records, monitoring the police privately, instead of having to work under the city council, which is deliberately now sabotaging.
But I didn't know the city council would do a turnaround. I mean, they caught me blindsided.
But they never did a turnaround. They never turned the other way to begin with. They opposed it from the beginning. See, that's the point. And I think if you listen to my show from 2006, and we talked about it then, I'm pretty sure. I mean, I don't remember the specific conversations, but I was saying, sure, Measure K, why not, if you're going to lead into 2008. But all this money is being spent, you know, and you've got a board of people who don't have any real enforcement powers anyway. And then, of course, we learned that they were gutting the small enforcement powers they have. It's kind of, you know, interesting. It might be interesting for you, Anita, to go to Santa Barbara or to contact the Santa Barbara folks and find out how their Measure K Commission is working.
Or even up in Oakland, they have Measure Z.
They had another measure where marijuana arrests are way down. Are marijuana arrests down here?
Marijuana arrests are up nationwide.
But what about in Santa Cruz County?
That I don't know.
See, that is our problem.
That's what we need to know. Give us that information?
Well, we need to find it. And perhaps if you have, I mean, I don't know if you have the energy or if I have the energy, but
maybe some callers or listeners out there.
If anybody is listening, 427-3772, callers and listeners or
well,
potential
if you're not
callers.
Listening,
if you're not listening, then we're not going to talk to you. I mean, that's
we're
just
gonna
how
just
I feel.
We're going to just sit here and talk to each other.
We're just talking to ourselves, or that could be. But hopefully, if any of you if we ever want to review this, it's going on to an archive, and hopefully that will serve to some extent as some history for this.
You know, to cut to the chase, though, Robert, it kind of just echoes what the chair said after he resigned, and he said he felt like the committee was no more than a rubber stamp.
Why don't you read his statement?
Yeah, let me tell you first a little bit about Larry True. He's an older man. When I first saw him, when the commission was first set up, I thought, uh-oh, we're going to have trouble. He looked like a real conservative, and I didn't think he would be very compassionate. But then as I got to hear him talk and listen to some of his ideas, I said, wow, this is really cool. I like him. I like Eric Rice, who was the co-chair. We're going to make some progress here. Unfortunately, I missed the meeting in November. Something must have happened because the chair and the co-chair resigned. So when I went to the meeting the other night and they didn't show up, I asked why they resigned, and Tina told me that they didn't have to give her a reason. They just weren't able to serve anymore. I asked the other commissioners why they thought they resigned, and I kind of was given the impression it was because of you. Now, nobody said that, so I really probably shouldn't even be saying that.
I actually have a lot of power in this town.
You really do, Robert. I
run things secretly, actually.
I'm not kidding.
You
have a lot of power and influence.
That's just how it goes.
You have an effect on people. But let me read some of Larry's response to me. When I left the meeting Monday or Tuesday night and I found out he had resigned, I went home and I wrote him, "Hey, Larry, it's Anita from the Measure K Commission. I was told at last night's meeting you'd resigned. Can you share with me what made you make that decision? And I'd appreciate any information you're willing to share. I'm quite confused right now." So it took him 2 days to get back to me, but boy, was I pleased when he got back to me, because he put down on paper what I was thinking and feeling and really couldn't articulate. So here I'm going to read it. It's only three paragraphs. It says, "Anita, I joined the committee looking for a way to serve the community. Given the direction and operational restrictions we were put under, it felt like I was not providing any service. I'm sure I can find other opportunities that are more in line with my goals. I feel like the committee is no more than a rubber stamp for the police department. Without the department's direct involvement, I feel the committee's work lacks credibility in the eyes of the community. Citizens come before the committee with events they feel have violated Measure K, and then all we do is add that information to an annual report. But what does this accomplish? The same results could be had by creating a form that citizens fill out and leave at the city's public counter. I think the police department should voluntarily provide the committee a liaison to look into these citizen allegations. If this isn't possible because of either time or budget constraints, why not give the committee free access to public records? In our last meeting, I asked Mr. Zach Friend for this access, and I was told I would be charged a fee."
Zach Friend is the police public relations person.
He's their spokesperson. "Anita, I spent more than 30 years working for a law enforcement organization that stressed customer service. I don't see that same attitude here, and it frustrates me. The citizens of Santa Cruz are the customers of the police department. We pay their salary through our taxes. We enacted Measure K and should expect the police department's cooperation in enforcing it. The police could do a lot for their image by getting involved. Instead, they choose to pass notes to us through Tina. This is not very productive in my mind. Please excuse my ranting and negative attitude. It's not my true nature. I enjoyed the year I spent working with the committee, and I did find Tina helpful, and I wish you and the committee all the best." He's echoing every feeling I have had, Robert. We need a police liaison. It is so true. Why can't there be forms that citizens can fill out and leave at the counter? That would come in duplicate or triplicate, to be left at the counter either at the police station, at Loudon Nelson Center, at the county building, on Ocean Street, over at Emmeline. Why can't we make these things available? And you know what? It's resonating in my head right now. I spent 11 years on the County Domestic Violence Commission, and we spent 3 years working on a response card. which was a card that a victim of domestic violence would fill out after her encounter with the police. And it would say, basically, were you treated fairly? Were you made to feel uncomfortable?
3 years, huh?
3 years, and we couldn't get it approved. And it's still, to this day, there's no response card.
Because it might criticize the police department.
They didn't want it to happen.
Too powerful.
And this was in the 80s and the 90s, and here we are 20 years later, and it still doesn't exist. So for some reason, they don't want this information from the public. They don't want it, but I want it. I want to know. I want to know if the police are abusing people. I don't want to assume that they are, but it's something I think that we should look at. And I can't tell you how disappointed I am that Larry resigned and that Eric resigned. And had they had stayed with myself and Candy Johnson, I believe her name.
Jackson.
Candy Jackson. We would have had a majority.
Well, Candy Jackson...
she volunteered to do something in the minutes here with both of them.
It's interesting. Candy Jackson was an outspoken voice against any Public Records Act request being made to the police department. There's you're pointing out Vice Chair Rice moved, seconded by Member Jackson, to approach the City Council about authorizing the committee to meet on a monthly basis until the committee's work is finalized. It's a pretty weak way of saying.
I'm pointing out things to Robert that I've highlighted.
He's trying to show me that Jackson was, you know, is doing some positive things. I don't believe these were particularly impressive, because what I heard most from her was when there was a direct attempt to get information from the police department, she went on and on about how much it would cost, as did Mary Lou Gecky, who is now the new chair of the commission.
That's something else I want to mention. That was a setup, Robert. When I heard that Larry had resigned and Eric resigned, I was seriously considering, even though I don't have much energy, of being the co-chair. I didn't think I wanted to be the chair, but I thought, you know what? I'm going to be
vice chair.
Oh, vice chair, excuse me. Mm-hmm. Vice chair. So I would have maybe a little more leeway, a little more access, a little more something. And I was planning on either nominating myself or asking someone to nominate me. It was a setup. Mary Lou came to the meeting late, so the voting was postponed. She wasn't sitting in her seat for 60 seconds before Mr. King looked at Tina and said, I nominate Mary Lou, second Candy, that. Then he nominated her. Now he is the chair. I mean, she is the chair, and he is the co-chair. And at that moment, I thought, you know what? I'm resigning. I'm out of here. I can't come to these meetings. But then it dawned on me, they cannot win. They cannot win, and we cannot let them win. Because we spend too much time, too much energy, too much money, and this is about our own public safety. We don't want the police harassing people for smoking small amounts of cannabis. I want access to records, and I don't want to have to pay for them, nor should we have to pay for them. It's just another way for them to inhibit and stall us.
You know, I suggested this to the former chair, Larry True, I guess 6-7 months ago when they had their last meeting, that they needed to hold subcommittee meetings. And they needed to hold public meetings to generate support. And you pointed out to me yourself that, you know, you've been on the air, December, January, or February, or maybe a little after. You were on the air once or twice, I think, at some point. Either you called in or you came in. I think you called in. And you said that you needed public support. You needed people to come and meet with you and be supportive. And that really is the missing element here. The people who put this together were, to some extent, paid. To some extent, they were volunteers, but the out-of-state money...
They were paid.
Out-of-state money paid to get this commission set up. Now, the commissioners aren't paid. They're volunteers. But they have the prestigious little name titles. They get to come to the meetings.
Get a name tag. I get to sit at the council table.
Right, hey, you know, you're pretty exciting. It sounds ridiculous, but as I said before with the Police Review Board, I keep repeating this. The minute the Police Review Board was dissolved, Madrigal, he was on the board, but he wasn't important because he wasn't interested in dealing with the police. He was using it as a stepping stone to City Council. But rather, people like Mark Half Moon, and then the vice chair, and a couple of other members of the board wanted, you know, to expose selective enforcement downtown. They wanted to expose racial profiling. They wanted to expose a display of force policies that were either nebulous or being violated or oppressive. And in response, the Rotkin Council, dissolved, abolished, slashed, and aborted this board. But what once that happened, instead of forming a Citizens Police Review Board in exile and continuing with the work,
they
all disappeared. And it just, I cannot understand why people do this. They don't get paid as commissioners, but they get paid with the prestige and the authority. And it's, I guess that's what it is.
Robert, it feels so good to know that you're really trying to help people that can't, for one reason or another. For every complaint I hear from a citizen on the street, I know there are 20 or 30 more that don't have anybody.
Yeah, but if you know that the board is a pointless group, and I'm not saying you shouldn't keep your chair on it, but why wouldn't you spend the time, and you're going to have 6 months before the next meeting to spend the time actually setting up some real hearings on taking some real action to end the drug war, getting some real stats on how many people are in jail in Santa Cruz for marijuana, how many people are Bob Lee prosecuting, how many arrests are actually involved. In other words, and you haven't got the energy to do this alone. You need to have, obviously, a bunch of people with you, but you could form the nucleus of this kind of a group.
Every time I've been on your show, Robert, and I've been on your show at least
you announce
six,
it
at
nobody
least
calls
six
in.
Times, yes. I've given my phone number. I've begged people, call me up.
Yeah.
Because you know what, Robert? This really isn't my issue. I have an illness. I have documentation from my doctor. I'm clean as far as medical marijuana. I'm 60 years old. I don't worry about the police or the feds coming after me. I'm on this Measure K committee because I have adult children who like to medicate. There are lots of people I know, younger people, that need to medicate for one reason or another, either an anxiety disorder, insomnia, it doesn't matter. They don't have to be terminally ill, dying in bed, to want to consume cannabis.
But now they're going to need $130 to get a card.
Hey, look at Medicaid, the doctors that came into town. They raised their prices every 6 months
or so.
But
I'm talking about the county. The county has now raised its prices significantly.
Mm-hmm.
I've
never recommended
Coonerty,
anybody get a county card
with
anyway.
With Coonerty in the lead, the question is whether how the police, that's another thing that needs to be monitored. Are the police treating people who don't have a card differently from those who, let's say, have a doctor's recommendation, which should be just as good? This kind of, there are all kinds of things that could be made of how the police department is treating Measure K, for example.
I have to say treating those less fortunate, Robert, because people that are doing fairly well can kick back
right,
in their little
right,
apartment and,
right.
and burn. They don't have a problem.
Yes, I agree, and I've talked about this before. People smoking marijuana without medical marijuana cards, but just smoking marijuana behind public businesses on private property, behind businesses on Pacific Avenue, but on private property.
With no one around.
With no one around.
Bringing no attention to themselves.
Deliberately leaving the Pacific Avenue area so they wouldn't, alarm the horses and frighten the children. Apparently children are supposed to be more frightened by marijuana than they are, by people, coming out of bars, or people sipping their martinis on the sidewalk in these enclosed areas where they can, like Chiantis.
Right, or polluting the environment with their big Hummers or whatever they do. Everybody's
right.
leaving a carbon footprint, and ours is a decent one. There's nothing wrong with cannabis.
But the police are violating Measure K, for example, by after people behind these buildings, and not as the lowest priority. They aren't, they're engaging in recreational marijuana use, so fucking what? And the fact of the matter is, what's really frightening is not just that you've got a police department that has the power to essentially crush this commission, but you really have the police department that has the power to flout the law. They don't have to pay attention to what the voters pass. They do what they want, and it's not like this is any surprise. But the question is, what can we do to take back community power? What can we do to take back community control? I want you all to call in and give me your answers. 427
We need community
3772 427-FRSC.
That's what it's going to take, Robert.
Give
I don't
us a
know.
Call.
Can we add? I mean, what do you advertise? You got to start putting up flyers. I mean, I don't know what to do or how to do it.
Well, smoke in might be a beginning. It's have a band playing around. I mean, it's interesting that I look back to probably this is too reminiscent of 60s and 70s, but I think we've all been divided by this idea of, well, if we have to be medical marijuana, we have to be
serious. No, you do not have to be medical marijuana.
Yeah.
You just have to be against the war on drugs. It's
right.
costing us millions every year.
And why don't you give us, while we're looking at this issue, you brought along some other updates from other agencies about...
I wanted to read you, a friend of mine was, actually he wasn't arrested, but I don't know how many of you are listening out there may know Ken Estes. He's a fine young guy. He's a quadriplegic. I met him up in Oakland in 1995. He's a grower and a provider. And I really didn't know he was doing as well as he was until I got this email from Cal Normal. And I'm going to read it. May 28th. The DEA raided three dispensaries operated by Ken Estes this morning. Known as Holistic Solutions, they were located in San Mateo, Richmond, and Clear Lake. The DEA also raided Ken's home and the homes of three of his managers, plus three affiliated grow sites in Oakland, San Leandro, and Humboldt. The raids appear to have been a smash-and-grab operations where agents only took cash and product but didn't arrest anyone. Ken believes that the raids were initiated on the tip of a former associate who was facing a lengthy federal sentence on his own cultivation charges. KTVU News is investigating. So I thought that was really interesting because here, I mean, you know, he's got three dispensaries, he's growing, he's trying to help people. He himself is a quadriplegic, he's married, God blessed him and allowed him to have two children, but he is a husband, a father, and he's somebody who is trying to help end the war on drugs. They didn't even arrest him. They just smashed and grabbed, took everything. Probably scared the crap out of everybody. Very troubling to me. And then I got the latest marijuana. Where is it? Oh, here it is. The latest marijuana policy project report for spring 2008. And I just wanted to tell you this little tidbit, that marijuana prohibition is costing taxpayers almost $42 billion annually. I'm going to read this little paragraph. It says marijuana prohibition costs taxpayers $41.8 billion annually in law enforcement expenses and lost revenues, according to a study by public policy researcher John Getman, which MPP co-released on October 2nd. Getman's analysis was based primarily on government estimates of the U.S. marijuana supply, prices, and arrests. Key findings of lost taxes and other costs of marijuana laws include 1. Marijuana arrests constitute 5.54% of all U.S. arrests, costing taxpayers over $11 billion in criminal justice expenses annually. The total U.S. marijuana supply is 14,350 metric tons annually, with a retail value of $113 billion. Not an M for million and not a T for trillion, but a B for billion. Marijuana prohibition diverts the entire $113 billion in sales from the legal taxed economy. Based on the White House Office of Management and Budget's estimate, the 28% of the U.S. gross domestic product goes to federal, local, and state governments as tax revenue. Marijuana prohibition is now costing $31.1 billion in lost tax revenues alone. To me, I don't know why we're not taxing and regulating. I don't know what the problem is. This group, Marijuana Policy Project, has been working on initiatives in Michigan, Massachusetts. They're all over the United States trying to get things passed. And sometimes they make a lot of progress and sometimes they don't. Ohio is getting ready to put something on the ballot. Rhode Island's getting ready to put something on the ballot.
Is anybody talking about decriminalizing or taxing and regulating marijuana?
None of them. Right. There was a challenge put out, though, to the presidential candidates, and it's funny, they have a little cartoon, and they all have like a little Mickey Mouse nose. Not Mickey Mouse, Pinocchio nose, because they've all lied. But Giuliani, Romney, and McCain have all said that medical marijuana isn't necessary or needed. So the Marijuana Policy Project put out a big ad, and they said, we have $10,000 for your campaign if you can just prove it. So let them try to prove that marijuana doesn't work. They can't do it. I don't know how the candidates feel, really. My concern is what's happening locally. I like to think globally, but act locally. I can't affect what's happening around the world. I can only be effective in my own neighborhood. They also have a little chart here of statistics of the number of state and local marijuana arrests, and the numbers have just skyrocketed from 250,000 a year in 1991, and I'm going to let you have all of this, Robert, when I leave, from 250,000 in 1991 to 850,000 in 2006, which is tripled, almost quadrupled, the amount of arrests.
Again, this is like an infernal machine. I mean, it just goes. If you fund it, it goes on, and the police departments are endlessly funded for this kind of stuff.
It's very frightening. And then I want to look. I want to read a little something from the new Cal Normal. Everybody knows what that is, the National Organization to Reform Marijuana Laws. Because Marion Fry, which was a lovely lady, she's a woman doctor, and her husband was an attorney, and they were against the war on drugs, working out of Oakland and up in the East Bay up there. And they were busted about a year and a half ago for growing 100 plants. And there's a full-page story in the new Cal Normal Cal Normal Reports, it's called, for spring 2008. They were both sentenced to 5 years in prison, which is unbelievable to me. It says the Ninth District Judge Frank Damrell, who deplored the sentence as a tragedy that never should have happened. Fry and Schaefer had run a popular medical clinic in El Dorado County, and they were the first Prop 215 defendants raided by the DEA just 2.5 weeks after 9/11. Robert, can you imagine 2 weeks after the towers came down, the freaking DEA was going and busting a doctor and a lawyer for helping sick people access cannabis?
In California.
In California. Yeah, I'm sorry. This is in California, yeah.
You know, again, though, I guess I'm looking for local implications, just as you are, and I know that
I don't have access to them.
Well,
I have more access to information from down
perhaps
south.
Perhaps you've been spending too much
north.
Time reading Tina Shul's reports and not enough time filing Public Records Act requests, which you already told me.
I've never filed a Public Acts request, and I am willing to do it now.
It's not hard to do. I mean, it's pretty easy, you know. And you'll either deny you or not, but at least you'll document that you're attempting to do it.
I want to do it,
and I'll be reporting on this in
and
future
again,
shows.
And again, I've asked you for your guidance.
I'm ready to help you at any time you want. It's not that hard to do. It's interesting. There are some other gloomy and also positive things that have been happening. Measure B in Humboldt County, as you know, Mendocino County, up in Northern California, which severely restricts medical marijuana.
Number of plants you can grow
for patients. Under the guise of going after big cultivators and dealing with fraudulent profiteers, which I know has been a concern of yours, Anita, it severely restricts people who need marijuana. And in essence, it probably violates SB 420 and Measure 215, Proposition 215, because there was a court decision, I think it's People versus Kelly, that happened in May, in which it was a finding that they can't, that the state law is a threshold. It can't be an upper limit. So they can't, if the state law can't do it, then certainly counties can't put a limit on the number of plants you can grow.
Well, they had initially voted that you could have 25 plants per individual, and they knocking it down to 6.
And there have also been severe restrictions in Ukiah on where you can grow, whether indoors or outdoors. I might find these kinds of actions prohibitionist and prejudiced as I am against them to begin with, biased against them. I would like to see the statistics and the basis for proceeding with this other than blind prejudice and a kind of a reactionary police department agenda, which unfortunately seems to fuel a lot of this. A statement in the California Normal Report about the measure against Measure B, which narrowly won in Mendocino. Measure B is described as a nanny pot measure placed on the June 3rd ballot, again, an off an off-year ballot, it's in the mid-year, I should say, so it's a hard time for people. They originally passed measure, I believe it was measure G, GK or R, but in 2000, Mendocino passed a measure which really strongly supported the right of people to grow marijuana, cultivate it, and to use it for medical purposes. Measure G, Personal Use of Marijuana Initiative. Measure B, however, repeals the county's landmark Measure G and rolls back the county's medical marijuana cultivation limits to the state minimum. And again, here's the question. Can there really be a state minimum under Proposition 215? Because 215 is an initiative passed by the voters. It can't be overruled by the legislature.
But I believe SB 420 said something like 99 square feet, or there was some number was put out there. But it wouldn't matter.
They claim the state minimum is 6 plants and 8 ounces per patient, which I don't know if that I think is the threshold which they can't go below. The question is whether, you know, they're claiming now that you can't go above it. Measure G approved by 58% of the voters. Measure G is the measure that approves marijuana. Measure B, approved by much less, essentially repeals Measure G. And again, these are local measures. And you might say, I like to see local communities taking control of their own destiny, but I got to say, and maybe this lays me open to, you know, being contradictory, when it comes to basic rights, like the right to use marijuana yourself in private or even in public, you know, if you're not injuring anyone, this isn't something that a majority can tell you can't do. But, I mean, a majority in Mendocino overwhelmingly voted in favor of this during a regular election. In an off-year election, they voted against it. Now, maybe there's been a real sea change, but apparently it was a much smaller number of votes. I don't have those figures now.
But there was a huge turnout. I mean, my friends Gene and George Hanamoto are very involved in what's going on up in Mendocino County, and their name is often mentioned in the local newspaper up there, and I communicate with them online. And Gene is often sending me articles and stories about what's going on up there. And there was an interesting little piece in one of the newspapers that said, but the Hanamotos are not the typical couple we would go after because he's 78. So, again, arbitrarily, because he's old, they're not going to go after him. And he is a big grower. It's actually where I get my.
Oh, they went in Santa Cruz. They went after Roger Mensch. I mean, he's no spring chicken. You know, he's up in Felton. D.A. Bob Lee went after him twice for sales of medical marijuana to people with cards. And there was some allegation.
But he was very bold. I mean, didn't he open up a shop on Pacific Avenue?
That was another group. That was the Pacific Cooperative. That was a different group.
Where was Roger Mensch?
He's in Felton. It's called the Hemporium. I mean, and the theory, as I said before, that D.A. Bob Lee uses is that all distribution centers for marijuana are illegal. The only thing that is legal is if people grow it themselves and collectively share, take, and caretake with each other.
Which they know is almost impossible.
Which is very difficult for many people who don't have that kind of facility.
It's not difficult. It's impossible, yeah. Robert.
Well, hey, now come on!
Come
you
on.
Potheads are always demanding things.
We
don't
need
you
growers.
Wonder, what
to
about
grow
our ahead. Kids? Protect our kids from the potheads.
Well, protect our kids from the government.
Oh, for heaven's sake! You're tuned to Free Radio 101.1 FM, FreakRadio.org. I'm talking with Anita Henry, who is still a member of the city's Measure K Commission
and has no plan on resigning. Trying to get you off your asses.
And has no plan on holding any meetings either until December. unless, of course, people call her at... how can people reach you, Anita?
People can reach me at 425-3444 and just leave a message for me with your name, and I would be more than happy to call you back. I want to get something done. My energy is limited, but I'm very passionate about this. And again, like I say, I'm not fighting this issue for my benefit. I'm very comfortable smoking my herb in my house. I don't worry about it. It's everybody else that's out there that needs somebody to advocate for them, just like you've been doing, Robert, since you've been in Santa Cruz. You've developed this reputation that you either rub people the right way or the wrong way, but I have a tremendous amount of respect for you, Robert, because you truly do advocate for the truly less fortunate.
And so for all you fortunate and unfortunate people, and I'm impressed, as it seems to be a ringing in my ear. Am I having a fantasy? Is that a real phone call? We'll find out.
I'd say it was my mother, but she's dead.
Hey, you're on Free Radio with Anita and Robert.
Oh, hi. It's Madison. I thought I'd call. You guys were just kind of aching for callers.
Thank you, Madison.
Go ahead, Madison.
How are you, Nick? The only point I have is I really feel the pot's a waste of time for them to bust it. I mean, if their kid's under, like, 18, okay, you know. If they have a parental consent, then let it go. But I really think the DEA should be spending their time on the date rape drug, with farm date rape drug.
Oh,
the
yeah.
Little boys' club should spend the time on the date rape club, on the date rape drug. Because,
you know,
far more dangerous.
You know, Madison, what you might do is make a Public Records Act request to the police department to try to find out how much money is spent on the real drug problem and how much is spent on the marijuana problem, and can report back to us and tell us what you find.
We don't have a marijuana problem in this county. If we do, it's that we're not collecting taxes from it to go into the social service programs that we so desperately need. And I hope that your listeners are aware that there are going to be tremendous cuts to health care, mental care, dental care. This is huge. June 20th at 1:30, the Board of Supervisors on the fifth floor is holding a meeting to discuss massive cuts to health care for Medicruz, for Medi-Cal. They may wind up having to close Dientes, the dental clinic. I was reading like a 15-page story about all the cuts and all the people that are going to be affected, and the Board of Supes are going to be voting on this June 20th. So if anybody can show up at this meeting and give a little anecdotal story, it would be great, because that's a big issue.
You know what else is the dereliction of duty with these three supervisors not putting, you know, these are commission posts. They take time and energy and money from the city, and it's what the people mandated, and they need to fill the post or you know, get out of the job. You have the job to do it.
Right.
You know, Emily and Tony and Ryan, haven't they filled the post?
Yeah, those aren't supervisors. Those are council members, but I catch your drift.
Yeah. Excuse me, yes, sir.
Yeah, no, but I mean, in a way, the supervisors could be taking the lead. The supervisors are a more powerful group than the county. They could establish a county commission like Measure K, restricting the deputies to making it their lowest priority. You know, they could do that. And, of course, there's been no such initiative at all. And, you know, I there isn't likely to be, even though Neil Coonerty bills himself as a progressive. I would love to have somebody like yourself, Madison, call Coonerty and say, what's going on here? Get back to me. Let me know.
I called Ryan, and I think I...
Right. No, I don't mean the council. I mean the Board of Supervisors, the group you were talking about, Anita was talking about, in terms of the people that control the real money bag in the county is the Board of Supervisors. The City Council is small potatoes, although we talk about it a lot, because the City Council, I focus a lot of my activities around the City of Santa Cruz.
Who won the Assembly position? I didn't hear you.
The Assembly position? Bill Monick.
Riley.
Bill Monick won the primary.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah, Riley.
Bill Monick?
Yeah.
Bummer.
Let me get back to what we're talking about. And thank you, Madison. If you got more information, please call in again.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, about what you were saying, Anita, indeed, Tim Rumford, or Tenderfoot Tim, as I call him, has done a lot of, I don't know if it's research or simply tracking down to the county building to get the information for this June 20th special hearing. I don't think it's a regular Board of Supervisors meeting, but it is the meeting where they're going to decide whether to slash the social service budget. And a lot of it is detailed in the article that I believe you probably read on indybay.org/Santa Cruz. That's, if you want to get to it again, it's indybay, I-N-D-Y-B-A-Y, .org. And then you go to the Santa Cruz section and you look on the right side under local news, and you can see, well, the Measure K Commission Survivor speaks out. That's Anita here today. And then below that, above that, is more Medicare cuts to doctors in Santa Cruz County. Tim Rumford writes about that. And he also writes a rather extensive story as well about...
And it's not just the medical care, Robert. I mean, it's psychological care. I mean, it's anything that has to do with medical, mental, dental service.
Right. I'm not a big fan of forced psychiatric drugging and too much of the mental health budget is focused
neither
on
am I,
that.
But I'm for therapy, you know, and therapists.
But I'm in favor of
that.
Shelters for folks, even though I often wonder, I mean, I know that the amount of money that's going into the shelter system in no way represents anything like, I don't know, ordinary decent housing for people, but it's based on the notion that people somehow don't know how to tie their shoes, when in fact, you know, psychological crises in different times in our lives are real things. But I think that, and my, of course, I'm prejudiced against pharmaceuticals, and I've done a lot of shows about, well, Robert Whittaker wrote a book called Mad in America, which I've interviewed him on a number of times, and we've talked about how countries that don't use pharmaceuticals actually have a higher rate of recovery than countries that do. And that's, you know, not widely known in Western society. There's a huge profit to be made in pharmaceutical forced drugging and pressure drugging of young people, frightening parents, and so forth, the big deal. But anyway, the real question, though, for the cuts that are coming is, I think, also in the shelter that's lost for people who are indoors. And it's pretty expensive shelter, I admit. But, you know, it doesn't mean that, you know, I don't encourage people to be thrown out on the streets so we can have a revolution tomorrow in theory, because everybody will be out on the streets, you know, freezing their asses off. Although, I suppose there's something to be said for voting for McCain for revolution now, because actually voting for Bush for a third term would give us maybe a revolution. That might work. It's hard to say, though, because, you know, voting for none of these folks gives you meaningful results. Voting for the Board of Supervisors doesn't give you a change in the drug war policy. Voting for the city council doesn't give you community control of police. And the reality is, it's in the institutional interest of all these groups to maintain the status quo as it
absolutely.
Is. Or to
oh,
make
Robert,
very
that's it. That's it.
Or very small reforms, you know, that happen. 427-3772 is the call-in number. I'm in the studio with Anita Henry. Got a couple other things I'm going to bring up. And Anita, at any time you can break in with some new thoughts or old thoughts. Or
well, I'd let your listeners know that working with the Board of Supervisors is no more pleasant than it is working with the City Council, because I served on a couple of commissions with the Board of Supervisors and found that very frustrating also. So I eventually resigned after 11 years on one commission and 9 years on another, because there's just no progress. And they just do not want change. They're giving the impression that they're changing. Everybody thinks we're such a tolerant, loving, you know, anything goes. And it's really not that way. It's just, it's all an illusion. It's an illusion, Robert.
Are you an illusion caller, or are you real?
I'm a real caller.
Excellent. What's your name, real caller?
This is Tenderfoot Tim.
Oh, hey. No. Tenderfoot Tim, the prolific writer on the Indie Bay.
I guess you could call it that. I don't know how prolific it is. But
oh, boy. Well, what you got for us, Tim? Oh, you did.
Well, I was listening to her talking about the medical cuts, and it is sweeping, and it's not just mental health. And the thing that bothers me is that, excuse me, we're having a little flare up here, but I believe that all these agencies, you know, some of them good and some of them are bad, are pandering to the Board of Supes. And they're all going to cry for their piece of the pie. And I think the people need to go, excuse me, and stand up and tell them, you know, what they need.
I know that there was a large demonstration, Tim, large, I don't know, maybe it was a small demonstration. There was a scheduled demonstration on Tuesday, which you weren't able to make. Did you hear any reports from that demo as to...
No, and I was disappointed because, you know, I posted my story, they posted their story, and they sort of melded it together. I was calling for more direct action. And the rally was basically, you know, a lot of the agencies coming together and telling everyone that the Board of Supes were nice and accommodating.
Now, we're talking, of course,
that's
about...
That's what I mean by pandering, is that...
We're talking about the proposed cuts on June 20th, but the Board of Supervisors to cut the budget by
10%. Yeah, several meetings in between that, though, that people can go to.
Go ahead.
I think every week leading up.
Do you know where? Any?
They're listed on that story on Indie Bay.
Oh, they are? Okay.
There's a little link that says commentary, and that's my commentary on the whole thing.
Yeah, I've actually read a little bit of your stuff on Indie Bay.
Yeah, as well as the budget cuts. And then they wrote theirs, and that, like I said, they sort of melded them together. And they list I'm sorry, right, Robin, repeat your question again. I'm sort of having a little epileptic flare here.
It's no problem. We're looking for the – I'm actually going on IndieBay to try to find the dates, but the computer is, as usual, getting cranky at the wrong time. It needs to be slapped around, but unfortunately that would probably produce bad results. If you know of any of the other meeting time, maybe somebody
else. Oh, yeah, they're listed on there. That's what I was getting to.
Yeah,
there's like, you know, there's one on the.
What?
they're listed on that post. But what I'm bothered by is they have not posted any, you know, like reports from the rally. There's a couple, like one post from my mother on her feelings about the whole thing. Some posts from me. The Senate today squashed the whole 10% decrease for Medicare doctors. They could have fixed that whole thing today, and they debated about it for 5 hours.
You mean they squashed the attempt to restore the 10%? Or?
No, there's going to be a 10% decrease for all Medicare doctors.
Right, so they stopped the attempt to stop the 10% decrease.
Yeah, they both wanted it, but basically the way I saw it was that the far right didn't want money taken away from all these HMOs that are now part of the Medicare system. And in order to keep that from happening, they basically came up with their own initiative, and so they battled back and forth.
Now,
and Clinton and Obama and McCain were not present, and they lost. And now they're not going to have time to stop it before it takes effect in July.
Now, I found the list of meetings. This is on Indy.
What I understand is the last meeting we're going to have restrictions on the amount of time we can talk.
Let me read the times of the meetings, then you can talk more about that.
Yeah.
June 16th, Monday, at 7:30 p.m. in Watsonville, at a location to be determined.
I'm not going to Watsonville.
That's a ways away. June 17th, next Tuesday at 7 p.m., there is a public hearing on the fifth floor of the county building in Santa Cruz, 701 Ocean Street. June 26th, on Thursday, is the last day of hearings at 9 a.m. Now, I understand, I guess June 20th is the big hearing, right? That's the significant.
Yeah, that's the big hearing, although... from what
the public to come.
The agencies
right.
are saying, the people who wrote some of that stuff, is that there's going to be a time limit on the June 20th meeting,
for
I guess probably because they're expecting a lot of people. And they're saying no time limits on the other meetings, although I'm not sure I believe that.
The only other meeting mentioned is the Watsonville meeting, I guess, that I can see here.
Okay.
And there's a meeting on June 26th, 6 days later. But
that's the final. That's where they finalize everything. After the 20th meeting, they'll go finalize everything. And I know Coonerty is, you know, trying to pull $2 million to appease everyone out of some of the budget. But
you know, we talked about this at length when you and I were in the studio. On Sunday, I believe it was Sunday, and you know, my concern was to have somebody come forward with an alternate budget that could show another place these cuts could be made, and then some kind of direct action, whether it be sit-ins, sleep-ins, vomit-ins.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's hard because time, like they just posted the proposed 2008 entire county budget, you know, so now we have a week to analyze that and 13 pages of budget cuts.
Yeah, but you would think these social service agencies that are losing their moolah boolah, you know.
Well, you would think, and it's interesting because one of those agencies, which I think is good, which is the Renaissance Program, which offers just counselors, not drug therapy like you're talking about. I was there today, and I mentioned it, and they weren't even aware of it, even though I know they got back these documents. And their whole program's going to change. They're going to get basically the backlog of all these people getting kicked out of programs. They take only Medicare, and only people in dire need will be able to go. My whole problem is, like I said, is some of these agencies I think are good, and some of them are very bad. And it's going to be hard for them to come together with a solution. They're going to end up pandering for their little piece of the pie to keep their programs going. When what we really need is a solution to fix an already seriously flawed system. And I just don't see people rallying around this in any great numbers at all.
You know, I don't
know.
It's
almost like they're so apathetic, even about, you know, what you guys were talking about before, the Measure K problems and the marijuana problems. People are becoming really apathetic. I don't see much war protest anymore.
I don't know why people. Can I interrupt you and just say I don't know why people don't get all upset about the retirement packages and the pension packages and the hundreds of thousands of dollars
millions
that these people are going to get when they retire. They're not even going to be like 62, 65. Some of these people are going to retire at 55 and collect maybe $250,000 a year for sitting on their ass and doing nothing.
Yeah,
that's what we need to change.
Yeah, exactly. There's things like that. I mean, like Richard Branson gets Medicare and a check every month, you know, and he's got jet planes. He's the owner of Virgin Mobile. He's one of the richest guys on Earth.
Well, you know, we need to talk about the people in this county and this city who are getting money.
I'm just saying that's one of the things that if they could stop, it'd save a lot of money.
Yeah,
like
the county administrative officer, I remember reading a while back when she retired. I don't remember her name.
Susan Mariello.
Yeah, Susan Mariello. I don't remember the figure, but I remember it almost made me cry when I read how much she was going to get when she retired. And I thought, she will not have to get up and work another day in her life, and she's going to get about $250,000 a year.
Yeah. There's been very little in the mainstream news printed about this. That most people I've talked to, they don't know about it.
I know.
And by the time they do, it's going to be too late, you know? And whatever happens, we're not going to get what we want unless people and just, you know, complete masses came out and protest and ask them to shelve this whole thing.
Well, this is what we need. I mean, if they had, did you see the massive amounts of people that showed up for the smoke out up at the university for
four? Yeah.
Interesting
is you can get people to do that, but there wasn't really any purpose behind that, really, besides a big party in my mind.
But at least
on the campus, and it was good. You know, it was good, but off campus, like the campus, they just had a thing where they sat in the middle of the road to get better wages, and they fought for better health care, and they got it up on campus. But the students don't come down off the hill and fight for people in this city.
Well, they should. They have the right to vote here. They vote here.
I know, they should, but they don't. I mean, some of them do. I'm not trying to say they're all bad or anything, but I just see a huge amount of apathy in this county and in this city.
I agree. It's a generational
thing. Drug war and the health cuts. It's like until it directly hits somebody right in their head, they don't care.
Well, remember, Tim, we're in the middle of a what looks like a deepening depression for a lot of people. It isn't,
yeah.
You know, it's
recession,
it's,
yes.
And it's and it, one of the implications is this cut. I mean, this is going to be
this Medicare cut's going to hit regular, ordinary, retired citizens.
And you're going to see more people on the streets, more people in misery. I mean,
more people in jails. You're going to see the ERs
flooded.
It's going
to embarrass the tourist trade in Santa Cruz, man. I mean,
it's not good
for the tourist trade. You know, it's just.
I would think that they would realize that. But I mean, if they think they've got a problem on the streets of the mall now, if these cuts come to pass, you know, whether it's a week, a month, a year. The streets are going to get a lot worse than they are now.
And I was going to say, and I think crime rates are going to go up. I think that when you start depriving people of basic needs,
we already have,
and it'll get even worse. It'll get even worse. People are getting more desperate.
I mean, but however, there are some solutions in the offing. I see Mary Lou Gecky, who not only chairs the Measure K Commission, has also written a story in the Sentinel about a social host ordinance is needed. This week, both the Santa Cruz County Board of Supes, this was actually this last week, and the Watsonville City Council will be taking direct action to increase the safety of our community by adopting a social host ordinance. This is an ordinance that would hold accountable the host of a loud, unruly gathering where alcohol is being served to consume by or in possession of minors in Santa Cruz County. In order to reduce youth access to alcohol, now we saw this, I used to call this the party at your peril law, which was supported initially by Rotkin, and then he supported some minor reforms that didn't pass.
Yeah, it's like the triple fine thing and you know, all that kind of stuff. They spend a lot of time on that kind of stuff, and it seems like they don't spend very much time on the bigger picture issues, you know, what's going to really affect us in the future and how we can really affect change in this county in the future. They just seem to focus on what's, you know.
It's very disturbing. You know why? That's because they have the comfort and security of knowing they're going to get that paycheck. Come hell or high water, they'll get the paycheck.
I saw that they're thinking about doing a, the city council doing a thing where they're going to say they're against the giving military aid to Colombia. And I think that's cool. That's okay. But at the same time, it's a 20-hour-a-week position. And, you know, for them to come out and say that because they say it's bad, they're against the drug war, to me, again, they're just pandering to try to be progressive when they really aren't.
To give the appearance of, I mean, if they're against the drug war, you do something about it here at home.
Yeah, exactly. And I wrote a comment about it at the bottom of that thing that, you know, I'm against military aid to Colombia for, you know, to fight the drug war. But if they really want to do something about the drug war, then end it right here in this town. You know, putting out these little things that, oh, we're against the war, we're against this, and getting other city councils to do it, to me is a waste of their 20 hours a month that they spend, or week, whatever it is, 20 hours a week that they spend during doing their job, serving us as citizens. And it disturbs me. I mean, it's good in a sense, but it's also just complete bullshit because they don't really mean it. They're just doing it to pander to people.
Now, there is a little burst of light here. The Supreme Court justices have ruled that terror suspects held for 6 years in Guantanamo and tortured can now appeal, perhaps that's while they're being tortured, to the civilian courts. Isn't that exciting?
Vote, yeah.
5-4. So, you know, as soon as the next justice dies, probably dies too.
Can you imagine how full the courts are going to be? Because every single detainee is going to file for that hearing.
Well, they just moved the detainees overseas to the friendly foreign countries that, you know, lend
a
torturing
hand. But who is going to wind up paying for the time of the judges? And we are.
Well, remember, that's a drop in the bucket compared to the $14 billion a month we're spending in Iraq. So it's part of the war on terror.
We're almost at $500 billion now on the war.
So it's gloomy stuff. Tim, anything else you want to add? Are you planning to do a die-in at the Board of Supervisors?
I've got a couple ideas. Like I said, I would like to hear more from people and their personal experiences in asking the Board of Supes to bury this and to come up with an actual solution that looks into the future and looking at these agencies and what they actually provide instead of just, you know, like I said, dividing up the piece of the pie and having each agency argue over who gets what and what gets cut and what's more important than what. Because some of these agencies I don't like and some of them I do. And that's where we're not looking at the bigger picture.
So what are you calling for exactly? I'm sorry, you have a specific...
I think that people who have actual experiences with the system, the flawed system that we have, need to go up and at least... And in this, I, you know, in all honesty, don't think it's going
to
work.
Wait, you're saying
here.
That they should do what? They should come to
they
the
should
meeting?
Go up
they
to should go to the meeting and speak for themselves and not for the agencies.
On June 20th.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And not that I honestly really think that that's going to have a huge effect, because I think a lot of these people, you know, are getting services from a said agency, and so they're going to go speak and say, you know, I really don't want this agency cut, and this person really doesn't really want this agency cut, and they're going to end up dividing everything up, you know, however the best they see fit, and we're still going to end up with everything really fucked up.
You're just a gloomy fellow, man. What can I say?
Well, I would like to see, you know, the system is already so desperately flawed that if I was to call mental health services right now and tell them that I was in desperate need of help, I cannot see a psychologist or a psychiatrist, even though I make $1,000 a month, have Medicare, Medi-Cal, and an HMO. They just don't exist here. Unless you're indigent or a woman, and I'm not saying that those services shouldn't exist for them. They have to abide by the rules that, you know, we all do. They just don't exist, and they just tell you straight out over the phone, I'm sorry, we can't help you. You know, if you're going to commit suicide, then go to Dominican and spend time in the prison for people with problems. But they simply tell you that there just isn't anything available. And if it's that bad now, and they do these cuts, you know, it's just going to get worse and worse and worse.
That's why I'm going to attend on the 20th. I'm going to be speaking for myself, yeah, my children, my grandchildren.
Yeah, I guess that's what I'm saying. People need to speak for themselves and not for these agencies who may not be working in everyone's best interest.
I agree. Personal stories will be very effective. And I'm sure there's going to be a very large turnout.
I hope so. The Sentinel really hasn't written anything that I know of any substance about it. So I'm not sure how many people really know about it.
Well, I heard about it from my doctor. I had an appointment at my doctor on Monday. I go to the Santa Cruz Women's Health Center over here on Locust. And she knows I'm an activist and I get involved in things that annoy
me. I'm surprised that even though all the agencies that are affected got back that 13-page document, that I haven't seen stuff posted in the actual doctor's offices, and I was at a lot today gathering records and stuff.
Yeah, my doctor actually had one in English and one in Spanish on their own individual clipboards in the waiting room.
Good.
Yeah, which I thought was very good. Yeah, because they're going to take a huge hit.
But, you know, and Santa Cruz Medical is doing the same thing, but again, they're asking for people to write to even to representatives that aren't even in our district because they are a big corporation that expands outside of Santa Cruz into other districts. So they're really asking people to go and write to people that represent not even Santa Cruz, but other districts, because they want to help themselves. And that's where I get into this pandering thing and where we need to really speak up for what we need as individuals and not what these agencies necessarily need, like NAMI and some of these other agencies. Anyways, that's just my take on it. And, yeah, I am pretty gloomy and doomy about this whole thing because I don't see any real solution in what they've proposed.
Yeah, it's called being a realist.
Yeah, well, that's actually my login on my blog, realist. But, yeah, so I am gloomy and doomy about it, but I am going to show up and I'll probably be wearing some sign, and I may just have tape over my mouth. I don't know.
Okay, thank you, Tim.
But we'll see. I'll be there.
That sounds good. That's the 20th of June. What is it? What time is the hearing?
1:30.
At the fifth floor of the county building.
Room 525.
I'm going to be looking for you, Tim.
All right. I'll see you there.
See you then.
All right.
Thanks, Robert.
All righty, man. Phone lines are open, 427-3772. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. On the Internet, I'm in the studio with Anita Henry. We have about 25 minutes left. On the upside, those who may remember a very successful groundbreaking settlement in Fresno last week, the Fresno homeless residents won $2.3 million. Actually, I think at $1.5 million, and the attorneys won 80, you know, the rest. But there was
attorneys. You think the attorneys?
No, but what happened? It's interesting. There was a follow up on this. If you want to read more about it, you can go to indybay.org, Central Valley, indybay.org/Central Valley, or just Google for Indy Bay and then Fresno. You'll find the stories. The mayor of Fresno is a guy named Autry, and he's sort of a sanctimonious fellow, formerly an actor, now a preacher. I actually met him. I went to Fresno in January. There was a homelessness marathon that was held from Fresno because there was this successful injunction that the Fresno homeless got from the authorities that stopped them from doing what Chief Ranger Wallace is doing here he and his troops, whether it's Sergeant Barry or Officer Seeley or Officer Aldrich, running around with the labor-ready crews, destroying tents and destroying property in the Poganip of homeless people and calling it trash and throwing it away after posting a little note on the property that we're going to destroy your property or, you can't camp here. In fact, it's been found through the Jones decision in Los Angeles and through settlements in one other city, San Diego, and law changes in Richmond and de facto city changes in Fresno, that you can't tell people they can't sleep at all at night on public property because it's illegal to do that. That's what we call a violation of substantive due process, or more specifically in the Jones decision, a violation of the Eighth Amendment, which is the right to be free from cruel and unusual punishment. And it is cruel and unusual punishment for an officer to come up and say, this law says you can't sleep at night and we're arresting you for it. Just can't do that. I mean, but the Santa Cruz police do. They don't provide an alternative.
And they also, they love to cite people with huge fines that they know these people can't pay, and then the warrants go out on them, and it, they just, they're destroying people's lives.
Right. It's actually, they've changed from warrants, because it's too expensive, and people, the jail costs may be too expensive, to giving people exorbitant fines that are sent south for civil collection. And that means, of course, people's credit is destroyed. In some cases, they lose their capacity to get a driver's license. And it has all kinds of implications that essentially make it harder to get out of homelessness. Mm-hmm. At the same time, in a sort of a hypocritical fashion, they're setting up homeless courts, you see, which help people by, you've got a lot of sleeping tickets, you can come in and you can do community service in the homeless court. That is until, of course, you get another sleeping ticket, in which case you can come in and do more community service because your crime was you fell asleep off in the wilds, up in the Poganip, hurting no one. Or perhaps you had to sleep downtown. You tried to sleep in a safe, well-lighted area. Maybe you slept in a city council, at the city council grounds, in the protest sleep out, as the Portland homeless are doing, or the Reno homeless are doing over in Reno, or the Ontario, California homeless are doing in Ontario. People have to sleep at night somewhere. And this issue in Fresno has resulted in a successful lawsuit. And it could, we are told, and actually Mike Rhodes, who is involved with this lawsuit, he's not an attorney, but he's an activist, spoke on the air on Sunday. This could be done here in Santa Cruz. All we have to do is document what Chief Ranger Wallace and his goon squads are doing. And I don't call police officers and rangers goon squads lightly, because in some cases, police officers and rangers perform an important function. However, in this case, that's what they're doing. They're acting as goon squads. That is to say, they're mindlessly destroying homeless property and criminalizing people who have no options, with an eye to a kind of social and economic cleansing which has no place anywhere, much less in Santa Cruz. Now, the mayor, this is sort of an amusing update. For those of you who have been following the case in Fresno, that we had a long discussion on Sunday about it. It's a lot of money the homeless are getting, and there is some concern because homeless people are already being victimized by people who want to come and think they have the money and are sticking them up and beating them up and so forth. And actually, we had two homeless deaths in Santa Cruz, which were mentioned today, not related to the Fresno case, but I'm going to get to that later. The judge ordered, the federal judge ordered the mayor to come into court because the mayor said of the court settlement that it was a ripoff, that the judge and the attorneys were victimizing the homeless because the judge was giving the homeless, giving the attorneys so much money out of the settlement. And in fact, according to Rhodes, the attorneys were largely doing it pro bono. But they did, you know, they did get a chunk of cash because it was a huge project. That's the problem with our sleeping ban lawsuit in Santa Cruz. It is a larger project than we seem able to manage at the moment. And we're having trouble kind of having the, getting the legal power, the activist attention, and the financial resources together to do it. But in Fresno, they got three out-of-town law firms to come to town and do it because a few good activists, homeless activists, people who were homeless as well as housed activists working with them, went around with cameras and took pictures of bulldozers bulldozing homeless property, bulldozing people's grandmother's pictures, bulldozing people's perfectly good sleeping gear, throwing it all away as a means of punishing them for being in a public place.
That's really meant to make them move along, though,
right,
isn't it? That's why they do it. They
yeah,
just
move along.
Move along.
It's also to punish them, not to even be there, because in some cases the homeless are willing to move along. They don't want to lose their property. Tell me where to go. I'll move along. We aren't protesting. We aren't saying we're going to
so
stay
intimidating.
Here.
So intimidating.
But we're just. But the answer is, you're not moving along fast enough. We want you to be gone. This is an object lesson for other people. And, of course, this is a violation of the Constitution. Obviously, it better be, or we got no Constitution worth considering to begin with, because the Constitution is supposed to reflect the basic rights which all of us feel are inalienable, as we, I think, was said a couple hundred years ago. So Autry made this snide comment, the mayor, about, oh, look at, he tried to turn the whole thing around and say, oh, the homeless are being victimized by the courts here because all this money is going to the attorneys. So the judge then called the mayor back into court. And this is the story about that. It's called Autry's Day in Court by Mike Rhodes. Fresno Mayor Alan Autry, responding to a request from Judge Oliver Wanger to explain a statement attacking the court and homeless people's legal counsel, said, I felt as if the homeless and the people of Fresno had a gun to their head. Autry was talking about the pressure he felt to settle a lawsuit brought to federal court to stop the city of Fresno from taking and immediately destroying homeless people's property. The portion of Autry's statement Judge Wanger was primarily concerned about was this quote, quote, the city of Fresno will comply with the court order and look forward to continuing our 10-year plan to end chronic homelessness. Ho, ho, ho. However, this white-collar exploitation of the homeless by the court and the lawyers is unconscionable. I am calling upon the ACLU and Judge Wanger to require half of the exorbitant lawyer fees of $750,000 to be donated to homeless programs, unquote. Ooh. Judge Wanger was particularly concerned with the mayor's choice of words, white-collar exploitation. In fact, in a response to Audrey's statement, Wanger wrote, quote, exploitation means unethical utilization for selfish purposes. The word exploit means to use selfishly for one's own ends. The term exploitation is defined as use or utilization, especially for profit, selfish utilization. Webster's Unabridged, exploit means to make unethical use of for one's own advantage or profit, turn it selfishly or unfairly. Anyway, you get the idea. The publicly issued statements of defendant Alan Autry, the mayor and the chief executive officer of the city of Fresno, call into question the good faith of the city defendants in entering into a settlement. This is what the judge said. At the start of the, and the point, of course, here is that if the mayor didn't want to settle, he shouldn't have settled. He should have taken it to trial. He shouldn't do the settlement and then start denouncing it the next day. And that's why Wanger called him into court. Now, I'm mixed about this. I believe in free speech. I believe you've got a right to criticize any judge for any reason. On the other hand, I'm more than happy to see the mayor dragged into court. So I've got a real conflict here, which I'll work on for the next few weeks and tell you what happens and how it's resolved. At the start of court this morning, Judge Wanger recognized that he had received an electronic communication from Caltran. They're also defendants in this case because they bulldozed homeless property too. Legal counsel for Caltran argued that no one from Caltran had made any derogatory statement about the settlement and that their clients would like, no matter what happens with the city of Fresno, the settlement to go forward for Caltran. Caltran has agreed to contribute $85,000 to the settlement. Judge Wanger said the court did not negotiate the settlement. He continued, it is the parties and not the court who agree to the settlement. Wanger reminded the court that the lawsuit is still before the court and that a jury trial could begin as early as next week. He said that it was his understanding that one of the defendants, Alan Autry, the mayor, had objected to the settlement. Speaking about Autry's public statement following the settlement, Wanger said, you can't accuse the court of committing criminal conduct. Wanger said, of course, I do that all the time, and the courts are engaging in criminal conduct, so Wanger's wrong on the general issue. In this particular case, I'm sorry, he's wrong, but I think generally courts are engaged in an ongoing criminal conspiracy against the poor. There's no question about it, particularly in the drug war. It's an endless daily violation of basic constitutional rights. So, Judge Attuck, stick that in your pipe and smoke it, please. That actually would be a real improvement if you did stick that in your pipe and smoked it. Wanger said, everyone has a right to criticize him, but it is beyond the understanding of this court what Autry's intent was when he issued his statement. Wanger read the statement with special emphasis on the section that read, white-collar exploitation of the homeless by the court and the lawyers is unconscionable. Wanger said, there is no basis to a settlement if the parties don't agree. Paul Alexander, legal counsel for the plaintiffs, those are the homeless people, who are suing the city, was asked for his input on the status of the settlement. Alexander said it was his position the plaintiffs have entered into a binding settlement. He said the city of Fresno, Caltran, and the named plaintiffs in the case have come to an agreement, and it must be honored. Wanger asked if Alexander thought that the settlement was an enforceable contract. Alexander said he thought so, and the plaintiff's legal team supports the settlement. Wanger replied, and what assurance do you have that the city will fulfill the agreement? Alexander said the city will transfer the money to an administrator who will distribute the money and the court will hold the city accountable. If there is any problem, we will be back, Alexander said. City of Fresno legal counsel James Betts was asked for his position on this settlement. He agreed with the plaintiffs that the settlement should move forward and then disagree with Judge Wanger's narrative regarding Mayor Autry's statement. He disagreed that, quote, any statement made suggests we don't want the settlement. The city does want the settlement to stand. Wanger asked Betts, the city attorney, if there was any basis in the law for his client, Mayor Autry's statement, that the court was engaged in white-collar exploitation of the homeless. Betts replied, the mayor has the right to make a political comment, which I agree with, and that the line of reasoning was a violation of the separation between the judicial and legislative bodies of government. That means judges can't tell mayors what to say and what not to say, and I agree with that too. Betts informed Judge Wanger that he will instruct his client, Mayor Autry, not to answer the question. Judge Wanger told Betts, the attorney for the mayor, that Autry is a defendant in this case and asked him to respond. Autry said, I would like to respond. Wanger asked him, what is the basis of the statement about white-collar exploitation? Betts, the attorney, interrupted, I'll bet, and said that his client is speaking against the advice of counsel. I thought I was in America, not the Soviet Union, Autry said. Wanger reminded Autry that there are political and practical consequences to your words and actions. Autry said, am I being held to your definition of exploitation? Wanger, my request to you is that you explain yourself. Yes, there could be consequences. After a brief huddle between the mayor, Betts, and city attorney Sanchez, Betts returned and said he objects to the line of inquiry. He said this was an issue of the separation between legislative body and the court. He instructed his client, Autry, not to answer. Judge Wanger said that Autry's earlier statement, after a preliminary injunction was issued to stop the city of Fresno from taking and immediately destroying homeless people's property, was different. And it should be said here that for 2 years, the city of Fresno has been enjoined, banned, forbidden from taking property, homeless property, because of a temporary restraining order and then a preliminary injunction. What would have happened this week is a trial would have been held on the permanent injunction for that purpose and also for damages. And the damages, as I said, could amount to millions, and the city decided to settle for $2.3 million, $750,000 of it to go to the attorneys. Then Autry decided to badmouth the settlement, which, as far as I'm concerned, it's his right to badmouth the settlement. But I'm also, frankly, and this is probably a mistake on my part, because I don't usually have much sympathy for courts, even when they make the right decisions. What is it? Schadenfreude? What's the right word? It's a delight in someone else's pain when that person's pain is a mayor who has been causing endless pain to homeless people over the years. I mean, I think it's good to see the mayor held accountable. I mean, he's a powerful figure, although a federal judge is also a powerful figure. So it's interesting to see how this plays out. Again, continuing reading the story in the closing minutes of my show here. In late 2006, Mayor Autry had said that, quote, it would behoove Judge Wanger and benefit this community greatly if he wishes to continue to express his personal opinion rather than judge, to venture out of his robe and chamber occasionally and to enter the real world and find out the real truth. Wanger said Autry's statement last week was of another nature. Autry, not taking his legal counsel's advice, began to speak. We hope we could live in the world we want, but we are in the real world. I love America, Autry said, but he felt many court decisions are unfair. With this so-called settlement, I felt as if the homeless and all the people of Fresno had a gun to their head. Looking at the plaintiff's legal counsel, Autry said he felt the city was up against overwhelming power. We are up against a group that will stop at nothing to win. These lawyer fees are outrageous, he concluded with, I believe the homeless were being taken advantage of here.
Duh.
And this story goes on at some length, but we only have about 7 minutes left in the show. So I'm going to remind the community that the city of Santa Cruz not only faces a potential lawsuit like this if Chief Ranger Wallace isn't reined in, and if the sleeping ban itself on another kind of issue, although a very closely related one, isn't overturned or modified by legislative action by the city council. But there's currently a lawsuit before the federal Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals involving my false arrest to city council for this mock Nazi gesture, a silent gesture indicating my opposition to a an abusive action taken by the mayor against a member of the public, shutting her down. She was a war protester. She'd just come up to speak at the mic, and he threatened her with arrest. So I smilingly gave this little, you're acting like a bunch of fascist salutes. I was arrested. And as you may have read in the paper last week or 2 weeks ago, it's now cost the city $110,000 to pursue this lawsuit, when they could have simply settled the whole thing, not even for money, but for a change in the city council rules. Now they're going to have to pay extensive attorney fees, and not to mention the $100,000 they're paying their own attorney in this. And it's, of course, it's a profitable activity for the city attorney. It's kind of strange.
Never mind how much he's making.
Right. I mean, he makes money both every time he comes to city council, and then on top of it, his contract provides for these additional expenses.
And
so
his retirement. These people are making out and not giving a crap about us, Robert.
In this case, I have to tell you, I think they're really misusing the public funds. But more important than that, it's interesting to see why this is done. This is being done to preserve the prerogatives of the city council.
What's the, in conclusion, what happened down there in Florida?
Well,
are they going to get that settlement?
Yes. Oh, of course, they'll get the settlement. They'll either get the settlement or go to trial, but I think they agreed eventually
to
go for the settlement.
In years they'll get it? Or
no,
they're
going to get it within a month. They're going to get a month. It'll be
lovely.
Distributed. Okay, you have about 2 minutes, caller. You're on the air. We're rolling into From the Cream to the Dregs very quickly. Go ahead.
You know, Robert, with all these cutbacks and everything, it's unfortunate that probably a lot of people don't see the fascist bullshit from the local level all the way up to the White House, but I do and a couple of friends of mine do. Now, with all this talk, like, you know, with Tim Rumpfer was talking about all the stuff that's happening with the Board of Supervisors, you know, I found out for myself, and I found out the exact dollar amount figure that these people make, and these board members make almost $100,000 a year. They get a 6-year term. You know, it's all about greed and profiteering. We all know that. It's all about money all going to the wrong places. Why is it that all these programs have to go through all this, like, butchering, you know, and yet these people, I think they got an increase in their pay, and the chairperson, whoever it happens to be, you know, this year, makes a little more than the rest of the board members, but they make almost $100,000 a year, and they get a 6-year term, and it really pisses me off, but I just wanted to say it, because I heard you guys, especially what Nita was saying about, like, she's right about all the money these people are making, how comfortable they're going to be even more so when they retire.
That's what gets me. It's the retirement packages that they get and the pensions. There's just too much money for not enough work being done. At our expense.
Yeah, these people, they sit on their ass on Tuesday morning, and a lot of times, you know, they won't make oral communication at the board meetings any other time than like 9:15, and I've tried to fight them about that, and they say there's nothing they can do about it, and then, you know, the way when they stand there and they say the Pledge of Allegiance, that really makes my blood boil, and it's not fair. It's bullshit. It's not fair.
Well, life is not fair. We do know that.
Yeah, why can't they just take a cut and pay? They could take a cut and pay. They could take, like, you know, I mean, they could take a cut down to, like, $85,000 a year, $80,000 a year, and they'd still be doing great. Why do they have to cut all these programs? Why can't they take a cut and pay?
It's self-interest. It's self-interest.
You know?
I know. It's just, it's very hard to find compassion. It really is. It's very hard to find compassion.
Are you going to this June 20th meeting to...
Where is it?
It's at 1:30, I believe.
It's at 1:30 on the fifth floor.
The floor of the county building. I want to also say the Board of Supervisors, which doesn't mind spending more $100,000 a year on salaries and has recently raised the salaries of its board members, mm-hmm. hasn't even got the interest in putting in a 24-hour line so you can call them on the weekends or after 5 o'clock and leave a message. So they don't,
I've left 3 messages for Mike Rotkin. He hasn't returned
my
something
does,
else I want
City
to
City Council imagine. Does have a 24-hour hotline, so-called.
He's usually
apparently
very good.
Apparently not very hot.
He's usually very good, Mike, about returning my phone calls, but I think because of the resignation of the chair and the co-chair and my mentioning that on the phone, I think he's afraid to, like, call me back. Or
Mike Rotkin afraid. I don't
think
so.
Yeah, I think he's...
I can't imagine the board getting more than what they got because, according to Andy Shiverin, he called me with the exact dollar amounts. I have them written down somewhere. The board members make $91,044 a year, and whoever the chairperson is makes $92,044.
And that probably doesn't even include their benefits, their health benefits.
Thank you. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And Anita, thanks for being with me in this edition of Bathroom Spears Broadsides, back again on Sunday at 9:30. We may have a special debate next week between Joshua Frank, who's a writer for Counterpunch and Dissident.org, and Matea Bramana, the guy who defeated Mayor Coonerty, had him defeated as Obama delegate. And that's going to be on the issue of the Iraqi war. Is a vote for Obama a vote against the Iraqi war or not? I'm going to try to get those two on the air. So come on back then. We'll talk about that. And thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathroom Spears Broadsides. Hope to be with you again. Thanks, Anita.
Hey, Robert, thank you for inviting me.
And stay tuned for Uncle Dennis, from the cream to the dregs.
Yes, Led Zeppelin, there from their second album, Whole Lot of Love. I'm Uncle Dennis. I want to welcome you to a show called From the Cream to the Dregs. And we play music of the 60s and the 70s here until about 11 o'clock tonight. Stay tuned for a whole lot of fun. We're going to open our Brew of the Week here in just a little while. And then at 9 o'clock, we'll have the Earth First Update, which will include an update on the Martin Fire. And then around 10 o'clock, we're going to play a whole hour of something really great for you. So stay tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1. We're out on the Wide Weird Web at www.freakradio.org.
And as I scan it closer, those names kept me on. Release from mortal patterns, my mind now goes beyond. Circles, miracles happen. As Lorelei shows me to my doom, fear has been stricken, the end will come soon. This is termination, the outcome of your life. Standing all you see.
I mean, it must be high or low. That is, you can't, you know, tune in, but it's all right. That is, I think it's not too bad. Let me take you down, 'cause I'm going to Strawberry Fields. Nothing is real, and nothing to get hung about. Strawberry Fields forever. Always know, sometimes think it's me, but you know I know and it's a dream. I think I know, I mean, yes, but it's all wrong. That is, I think I disagree.